Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. We're so glad you joined us again this week. We are brought to you by the good folks over at Accurate Mortgage Group. If you're looking to buy a house or refinance a house, give them a shout at accuratemtg.com and they'll get you closed and back to life. Got Encyclopedia Steve here as always. How's it going this week, Steve?
I'm doing good, Hino.
Excellent. It's a beautiful day out there. We love that. Or is it raining? I can't even tell. Where I don't get outside much. You know?
I know. We don't have any windows in the studio, so there's no way to tell.
Don't really know. Well, we got a very special guest in the studio. This is the time of year when everybody's buying houses and selling houses. It's the hot season. So we kind of figured we'd bring in an expert. We got Wendy Dyes of Legacy Real Estate Group in here to kind of go over some tips about how to sell your house better and how to get the right price for it. And if you're on the buying side, how to maximize that and deal with the market that we're in. So Wendy's been a realtor in this area for, gosh, at least 20 years. She's very, very experienced and knows her stuff. So Wendy, welcome to Hino's Home Show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So when you go and you list a house and you go there for the first time, what's the biggest thing that you see in your head? You're thinking, uh-oh, going to have to do something about this.
Yeah, one of the biggest things is it's just clutter, personal items, just
clutter.
Yeah.
God, I have no idea what you're talking about. I have no idea what that even means. What is this clutter you're talking about?
Yeah. I'd say the number one thing you really need to do is just go through and declutter your house, you know, and that's everything. That's opening up the closet doors and the cabinet drawers and kind of depersonalizing.
You mean like in the kitchen, that kind
of thing? Sure, absolutely. Okay. But depersonalizing the house. You know, putting away anything that's not necessary.
Okay, when you say depersonalizing, I assume you mean like family photos and things like that?
Absolutely. What you want to do is make sure that the buyer's walking through and they can picture themselves in that house and it's not your house. So take those family photos down, take your personal photos down. You know, if you are a big sports fan or you've collected of different items and things, I say take that away. So anything that's personal to you, put it in a box, you're moving anyway, and let someone else be able to kind of put their own ideas as to what the house is supposed to be for them.
And that way you don't offend any sports fans who might be, you know, rooting for the other team, maybe.
I've seen it happen before.
Really?
Absolutely. Somebody walked through and said they're absolutely not buying this house, and it was perfect for them, but they were the wrong sports fan.
Oh, no.
The wife was crying and the guy walked out.
He's like, absolutely not. Yep, no way.
Absolutely.
That's funny. You know, once you put all this stuff in a box, where do you put it? Is it okay to just like slam everything in one closet, or what do you think people should do?
No, you know, you're moving anyway and people know that. So I tell you, I mean, if you have a basement, that's great. But in Tennessee, we don't have a lot of those. So clear out your garage. Nicely stacked boxes in your garage. They know you are moving. They know the garage and all the stuff is going with it. So if you have a place in an attic, the other thing that's easily done is just get a storage locker. They're not that expensive. And go ahead and take your items down to the storage locker. It will make your move a lot easier when it is time to move. So get the smaller things out of the house.
And hopefully it's only going to be short term anyway, like a month or two. So it's not a huge investment.
It's not a big investment, but it would make the best, make your house show better and make your house sell in a shorter amount of time. So
would you get rid of like furniture as well?
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many houses that you've outgrown the house, right? Any pieces of furniture that you really don't need. I mean, everybody, you can look in your living room and you probably have extra bookshelves and tables and things that you really don't need, small chairs and things. So open the house out. Take a lot of that furniture out. Make the house look as large as possible. I've seen 4,000 square foot houses just cram packed of furniture, you know,
and it doesn't look that big.
And it doesn't look big. So people walk out and think, oh, well, this is too small for me. So make sure that if you can, take those pieces of furniture out, extra drawers and cabinets and things like that, like bookshelves and things that you really don't need. And then also arrange the furniture. Most of us have furniture that's arranged probably around a television, you know, and it's for comfort. But what we want to do is maybe open it up. So think about how could you arrange your sofa and your chairs in a way that is going to make the most of the room, most space in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've got an ottoman or a coffee table, things like that, take that out, open up the room a little bit more so that it looks like you've got a ton of space.
It's funny, actually, that you say that. So the house that we bought now, long story, essentially friends of ours were friends with the owners of the house. So it ended up kind of becoming a big joke after a while. But when we first looked at the house, their furniture was arranged in such a way that it basically cut off the open space. Like it cut off the living room from the kitchen and the dining room.
Okay.
And so once we moved in, you know, we kind of recognized the flow of the house. And so we set it up so that the living room kind of flowed into the other rooms. And so our mutual friend came over and he was like, you know what? This is way better than they had it before. And it was just, it was kind of wild to me too, looking at the way the furniture was set up.
Don't cut off pathways like you suggested, right?
Exactly.
Open up that place. Most people can't envision that. So you did and your wife did. So, but most people can't. So go ahead and set it up that way so that pathways are clear, opened up, more space in the room. So that they can really envision living.
I wonder if that goes too far sometimes, if people see through that. Because I've gone to open houses where you'll have like a bedroom and it's got like this tiny little table and one chair.
Yeah.
You know, in the whole room, you know, it's like, right, you know.
Well, most everyone has gone through a model house.
Yeah.
You know, and even if it's not your style, you can still sit down in the living room of a model home, of a brand new construction home, and say, oh, I could live here, right?
Yeah.
And the reason why is that it's depersonalized. It's set up just so in a great fashion so that it's not necessarily to live in, right?
I mean,
the way you would live there is probably different than a model home, but everybody could kind of feel themselves in that house. And that's what you want to aspire to try to get your house to look like.
Now, I heard a rumor years ago. I don't know if this is true, but I heard that there's a whole furniture industry that makes actual 3/4 size furniture just for model homes so that their homes look bigger.
Yeah.
You know, but you can't actually go out and buy that couch that same size because it's it's tinier than what you would normally find.
Yeah, that's funny. You know, another good thing too is also like doing a queen, like downsizing your bed.
Yeah.
So if you've got a queen bed like in your guest room, putting that one into the master and then taking the king bed out, that also is going to make the master bedroom look a lot bigger.
Right. Just
toss a sleeping bag in there.
Yeah.
Look how big this is.
You know, the second thing that I think that some people overlook, which is the cheapest thing you can do, is just clean.
Yes.
Okay. You know, because the things that if we walk through the same door every single day, we're not really looking down at the door handle and the door and all the smudge marks.
The fingerprints.
Fingerprints. And, but when someone else walks in, that's what they see, you know, and they feel like it's nasty and it's dirty, whether or not it is or not. So do the deep cleaning that you normally don't do. Wipe down those baseboards, clean the cabinet doors, clean out your closets, wipe down the light fixtures and the baseboards.
Or hire a professional to come in and do that. It's not that expensive. We had a great show on Mama Clean a few shows ago. You can find that on the website. And she had some great tips and obviously knew her stuff. So I would probably just go ahead and hire a pro to come in and like do it right.
Do the deep clean. Yeah. And make sure you've got the smell test. So if you've got dogs or someone that smokes cigars or something like that, you know, make sure, because a lot of people are very sensitive to that.
Now, I'm interested that you said that. Would you ever recommend, if you're like doing an open house or something, that somebody like bakes cookies or something earlier in the day to kind of make the house smell like fresh cookies or fresh bread?
As long as it's cookies, not like curry or something like that, you know?
Some super strong smell.
I say something very neutral, if that's what you want to do. Maybe a couple of candles and...
candles. All right. Well, what about just repairs and stuff? How far do you need to go with, you know, fixing up the house before you put it on the market?
You know, that's a great question. One of the things usually people know when something's not operating properly in their home. Maybe you've got a slow leak in a kitchen sink or something like that, but you've kind of overlooked it. Make a list of all the things that you knowingly is wrong with your house. And go ahead and try to get those things fixed, because it is going to get caught in during an inspection for a buyer.
Okay.
And they're always going to anticipate that it's more money than what probably a handyman can do for, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, things like, you know, making sure the doors are opening properly, you know, if they're not, have those.
Or if they're squeaking, I mean, a couple little squirt of WD-40 or whatever, and that takes care of that.
Yeah, I had a buyer one time want to back out just because there were squeaky doors. You know, wow. They didn't think they could deal with that.
I mean, I've seen an inspection come up before, just, you know, that the wall plates were cracked, you know, the little plastic plate around a light switch. Yep. I mean, those things are literally like 75 cents Home Depot and takes you like 30 seconds to swap out.
And light bulbs. You know, I always tell everybody when we live in a house, we want kind of an amber color, a cooler color. When we live in it, we want it darker. But when you're showing the house, you want it really bright. So make sure you've got those bright LED lights and make sure they're all working properly, because an inspector is going to go in and if a light bulb's out, he's going to say, have a licensed electrician look at that.
Because, yeah.
You know, there could be something wrong with it. So changing out your light bulbs, things like that's really simple to do. Simple plumbing projects. You know, if you know your toilet bowl is actually like, that's a big one.
Where it's wobbly.
Where it's wobbly. Make sure that it's tighten those things up. Inspectors will always get that.
So it sounds like really we just need to bust out the honey-do list.
Absolutely.
All those things your wife has been bugging you about for like months and months and months, just go ahead and do it.
Well, dang. Okay, well, we're going to sell our house in about 10 years. I better get started now. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, let's talk about ways you can make your house sell faster if you really, really need that quick sale. So we're here with Wendy Dyes of Legacy Real Estate Group, and we'll be back in just a few minutes here on High Nose Home Show. Welcome back to High Nose Home Show. We are brought to you by the folks at Accurate Mortgage Group. Yeah, we're talking about whipping your house into shape if you're looking to buy it or sell a house. Actually, mostly selling, because we got Wendy Dyes in the studio here from Legacy Real Estate Group. We are brought to you by the folks at Accurate Mortgage Group. They will get you closed and back to life if you're looking to buy a house or refinance a house. So, Wendy, if you need to sell a house quickly, when do you need to sweeten the deal? What can you, you know, when do you figure out if you need to sweeten the deal or not?
Well, and that goes back to those days on market I was talking about.
Okay.
You know? So just depending on.
So you wouldn't really know that at first. You would just kind of see how it goes at first and then.
You know, if you live in a neighborhood that has 10 to 12 active listings on them and they're not under contract, well, there's your competition, right?
Right.
So what we're trying to do is decide, you know, how do we get your house to sell before they do? You know, maybe some of those houses have been on the market a little bit longer. So we're not necessarily in that sort of a time period right now. Houses are selling pretty fast. But if you do find yourself in a situation where you do have a lot of active listings in your neighborhood, you want to make sure that you're going to stand out. So all those other things we were talking about, the decluttering, making sure your house is absolutely perfect before that very, very first showing. You know, make sure it stands out on the internet, that you've got professional photos, that it's fully optimized online.
Yeah, so how important are the photos? Because whenever I look through, I'm kind of a listings junkie. I'm always looking just because it's fun to look at. And you'll see a real big difference sometimes. It's really obvious that the realtor just took pictures with their cell phone and they're not lit or anything like that. And then some other pictures look amazing. And, you know, they could make the worst house look awesome, you know?
Right, and that happens a lot. But having professional photos, I don't care what price range you're in. I mean, that's the very first impression that someone's going to have of your house. They'll find it first online.
Right.
And then they decide whether or not they're going to go see it.
Yeah.
So make sure, I don't care if you're in a $200,000 house or a $500,000 house, make sure that you've got good professional photos with wide angle lenses, that the lighting's good, that everything is clean. You know, the other thing I would say is don't find a photographer that's going to Photoshop too much. You know, because one thing that can happen is I've seen houses, like you said, that have been Photoshopped so much and you go in and you're really disappointed.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a real big letdown from what you saw.
Exactly. So don't try to let down your buyers because it's only going to show in the days on market, and you're not going to be getting contracts. Yeah.
Eventually, so. People are going to have to see it in person, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, so
there's really no getting around that part.
Yeah, so you know, make it as nice as you can, but those photos are really good. You know, landscaping. You know, if you can clean up your front yard, the very first place that people go into your house when they're there is your front door.
Yeah.
How many times do you go through your front door?
Oh, every day. Yeah.
Oh, I never do.
You never do?
Never. I go through my garage.
Okay.
Oh, I don't even know what my front door looks like practically, right? And a lot of
people. Well, it's rectangle.
Right? But, you know, a lot of people don't if they go into their garage or side door. So you've got to remember that the agent's taking you through going to be taking the buyers through a front door.
Got it.
So paint that door, clean the front porch, paint the railing, make sure that the lock actually works. I can't tell you how many locks, you know, keys break off in, or they haven't they haven't been used a lot, so they're hard to use. So make sure that lock is actually working properly.
I install one of those combination type locks,
right?
So you wouldn't even need to have a lock box. Are you seeing that a lot?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't suggest that you give someone your personal. So maybe changing that lock.
Yeah, with mine, I can set up a special code, and then I know that was the realtor or Steve. When he comes over to drink my beer, you know.
Yeah.
Well, so like you're talking about, this all really kind of falls under first impression, right?
Right.
So it's like you said with the photos, you know, you want them to be an accurate representation, because once they show up to the house, the first thing they're going to notice is, wow, this looks different than the pictures.
Yeah. You don't want them disappointed.
It's like online dating. You know, you don't want to put some picture of a supermodel on there and then you walk in or I walk in and they're like, what is that?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that's, you know, having that good first impression. I feel like I've heard this in the past, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there's some statistic out there that like having a really good first impression or really good curb appeal will help your home sell for a little bit more than an average home that doesn't have that. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You want someone to fall in love with it and to feel like that they don't have to do anything. So people are already paying at the top of the market right now. We know that. Houses just keep increasing in price every single month, year after year after year after year. So buyers are already thinking that they're paying too much. They really are.
Yeah. So, no matter what. Yeah.
Exactly. So if you can make the house feel like it's move-in ready, like steam clean the carpets, repaint some rooms, do some of those things that they feel like I can just move into this house and I know it's priced a little bit more, they're going to choose your house over those other listings.
Okay. So what if you have one of those listings that people aren't falling in love with right away, and now you need to figure out ways to kind of sweeten the deal and make, you know, make people interested again? What are some of the things that you can throw into the pot to make people want to buy the house?
Well, number one is price it right.
Okay.
So every house will sell at the right price.
Sure.
And you will eventually get to that price. So I don't set the market and you don't set the market on your home price. The market does, right?
Right, right.
And so, you know, eventually you'll get that. And it's really priced based on condition. So if you're asking me how to sweeten the deal, the very first thing I would do is probably take a price reduction.
Okay.
And then the next thing I would look at doing is, you know, I mean, that would be after I've made sure that the house is in good show ready and moving condition.
Right.
And then at that point, you know, there's things that you can do and there's a lot that you can't. But what you can do are things like throwing in the refrigerator. That's the only appliance besides your stove and your microwave and things that are actually
like permanently
built into your home that you can give a buyer without it affecting the appraisal price.
Really? So you can't leave other things like, let's say, the washer and dryer?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because those things can be expensive. So.
Yeah.
You never know. And an appraiser never knows. So it's the contract that he's looking at. And so he may say, well, I don't know if that's a $5,000 washer dryer or if it's, you know, $300.
That makes sense. Because people might not know this, but when an appraiser appraises a house that's being purchased, they get a copy of the purchase contract. And so what you're saying is that would be on there.
Correct.
Hey, this house is coming with the washer and dryer. So now he's got to figure out a way to value that.
Right. So he's going to have to go get an appraiser for appliances to say, is this a $5,000, you know, whatever. How much is that worth? And be able to take that off of the house.
So then in a situation where, you know, the buyer and seller agree to, let's say, I don't know, the pool table. They want to keep the pool table. How do you handle that then?
Well, a pool table, anything like that, is considered personal property.
Okay.
And in the state of Tennessee, a licensed agent, we don't get into the practice of selling personal property.
Okay.
So at that point, it really needs to be an agreement between the buyer and the seller. You know, pool tables are hard to move, and a lot of people don't even, maybe they don't want to move it to the next place.
Right, might be cheaper just to leave it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but at that point, it's really an agreement between the two.
So you just have the buyer and seller talk to each other, work out a deal, and do that on their own.
Yeah,
and they can do that. Venmo me the money, and we're handled.
They can do that after closing, but it's not going to be anything that would be contingent upon the contract that we write.
Got it. Okay. Well, what about other things like, I don't know, a home warranty, that kind of thing? Would that help?
Absolutely. And that always looks good too. So if you know that your house already has a 10-year HVAC and the water heater is original and things like that, people can walk in and already kind of say, well, I'm going to have to be replacing these items and these are really expensive items. Mm-hmm. So what one thing that you can do is add a home warranty. It's not very expensive. Ask your agent. Somewhere around $500 to $600, you can add a home warranty that would cover a lot of those appliances. Not all home warranties are the same, so do your research. Most of the time, agents have a lot of good information on which ones to choose, and that does help, and that will help the buyer feel a little bit more comfortable knowing that they're not going to have to immediately go in and replace something that's a large item.
I think a lot of people don't realize that you can actually go out and buy your own home warranty.
Absolutely.
You don't have to just do it when you're buying the house.
Yeah, anyone can. And then you can keep it renewed. So usually the home warranties, like a seller would provide, would be for a year. And then at that point, you can choose to renew that for, you know, as long as you want.
Now, another thing that you could do also to sweeten the deal, we see this a lot, is actually sellers giving closing costs to the buyer. Right?
Yes, you can. So, I mean, if that's really where you need, depending on the price point of the house, what I'm finding a lot lately, and maybe you guys have too, is that there's a lot of people that are now considering being homeowners. They've been renters, but because the cost of renting has gone so high and the interest rates.
Yeah, they don't have a big savings.
Right. And the interest rates are so low, so they can get into a house, but oftentimes they don't have those big savings. So, sometimes that's something that we have to consider.
Especially too, because if you look at it like your closing costs, let's say that the seller is going to give you $5,000 towards your closing costs. That means that's $5,000 less that you have to bring to closing, right?
Right.
Well, if the seller lowers the price $5,000, well, if you're only putting down, let's say 5%, 5% of $5,000 is only $250.
Right.
So rather than get the seller to lower the price by $5,000, the seller is going to walk away with the same amount of money. You know, they're dropping the price $5,000 or they're giving you $5,000 in closing costs. They still make out the same. But me as the buyer, I would much rather bring $5,000 less to closing than $250 less to closing.
Right. And that scenario works great now when the interest rates are so low, you know, so it really doesn't make that big of a difference. $5,000 means a lot to the seller because they're just looking at a bottom line.
Sure.
But to a buyer, like you said, it hurts to kind of come up with all that money where $5,000 on a low interest rate is probably not going to change your payment much at all.
Well, listen, we need to take another quick break, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more of Hino's Home Show. So come on back. All right. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. We won't back down off our price. That's what we're talking about. we're talking about buying houses, selling houses this week with our local expert, Wendy Dyes of Legacy Real Estate Group. We are brought to you by the Accurate Mortgage Group. You can find them at accuratemtg.com if you're looking to buy a house or refinance a house, I should say. They'll get you closed and back to life. You can also find them at hinoshomeshow.com. So, Wendy, the big kind of elephant in the room with all of this is like at some point, unless you're doing a for sale by owner, which is a whole separate other can of worms, you got to pick an agent. And if you're like me, you've noticed that there's probably like 10,000 just on this block. I mean, they're everywhere.
Right.
So how do you pick one? How do you know that they know what they're doing?
Well, you got to ask a lot of questions, you know? So to find an agent that's right for you, mm-hmm. you know, and what you're needing, whether or not you're a first-time home buyer or if you've bought and sold 4 or 5 houses in your lifetime, you need someone that's going to be able to walk you through the process. The process often changes. And there's so many scenarios. So an agent will be able to tell you sort of the bullet points of how it works. But if I were to sit here and tell you every single scenario that could possibly come up during the process, I mean, there's just never enough time.
Right.
So you need someone that you trust that can work through all of those problem solvings.
Okay. Now, you know, everybody starts somewhere. So, I mean, would you necessarily shy away from somebody who maybe hasn't been in the business that long?
Well, you know, you want to make sure that they're well-connected, that they understand. I mean, if it is a new agent, make sure that they've got mentors and people that they can go to.
Good point,
if
yeah.
they've got a good structure behind them, support staff and people that they can ask those serious questions to. But this is one of the most largest purchases anyone will ever make. So make sure that you've got someone that can help you and will, you know, fight for your rights.
Now, you also mentioned, too, when we were talking before the break, it's really good to ask what sort of network the realtor has, right? Like what kind of partners they work with, that right. sort of thing. Will you elaborate for us on that?
Yeah. Like, so for example, I mean, if during the inspection process, you know, I mean, there could be anything that comes up and you want to be able to, houses all have flaws. You can buy a brand new construction house and find issues with it, right? The problem is, what do you do with it then? So if you're a buyer or a seller, you know, and you discover that you've got termites or you've discovered that there's some foundation issues. Foundation issues is very common in Tennessee. We're built on rocks, but you want to make sure that it's going to be done correctly, that it's going to be done for the right price, and then it's something that you can live with that decision. So having an agent that can walk you through all of those scenarios, you know, that they've got trusted partners such as their mortgage company like you, Hino, that I can come to, that they've got a good title attorney, that is your legal defense, and that would be their protection. So making sure all of those things are very, very important, that your agent has established relationships. Like,
like with roofers and yeah. electricians and plumbers and all that
kind
of
thing. Well, absolutely. I did a final walkthrough in a house a couple of weeks ago, and it was empty, and it had just come up a big rain. So when I went in a day before closing, there was a huge, like, water leak from the roof.
That wasn't there before.
It was not wow. there before. So what do you do? You know, how do you get closed? Do you close? Do we know what the issue is? And
yeah, is it big? Is it small? What?
Yeah, and until we get a roofer out there that tells us how much that's going to be to fix and how big of an issue it's going to be and how they can stop it, you know, I wouldn't advise my clients to be able to keep moving forward. But to get a roofer at Sunday afternoon, you know, before a closing is pretty hard to do.
Yes.
So, you know, luckily I had a network of people that I was able to get a roofer out there, get it tarped, understand what the issues would be. So at that point, my client could make an educated decision if they were going to move forward. We actually went back to the seller. And because the sellers will need to keep that house in the same condition it was in as to when my clients put it under contract.
Right. And so since that happened after that point, they have to fix it.
And they had to fix it, right?
Right. Right.
But you've got to know what needs to be fixed and how much that money is that going to be. And so, you know, if you don't have the right people that can get out there in a real quick fashion, mm-hmm. that could have taken 2-3 weeks for us to even decide.
Sure,
you know, and my clients have moving trucks and the sellers are ready to get their money. So, yeah. So, understanding the agent and the resources that they have, the knowledge that they have, just because you've bought 3, 4, 5 houses in your lifetime, you know, make sure they do that in a month.
Yeah.
You know, they can understand, you know, every solution that you will need.
And something I think a lot of people don't realize is that once a seller becomes aware of a problem, let's say you'd back out of the deal, but now they know that there's this roof leak, they are obligated by law to disclose that to the next buyer if if it's not fixed.
Absolutely. They have to disclose that, you know, and even for their own legal protection.
Yeah.
You know, so we have these things called disclosures, and it's for the seller's right as well as the buyer's to legally protect them. So, yeah. So, you know, they can't just kind of patch it up and say that it never happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, a good buyer's agent then would have to hold that seller and their agent accountable for disclosing it if for some reason they decided not to fix it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Now, if you have any friends who are in real estate or you talk to real estate professionals, I know all of us in this room, we've been doing this for a long time, right?
Right.
So we still get surprised with things that happen, and we've done thousands
There's an endless array of things that happen. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so being able to get together with your partners and figure out a solution and work through that in a quick fashion is so valuable for people. And so I think that's one of those things. I bring that up to say, even though we do this every day for a living, there's still things that are going to happen that you aren't prepared for. So if you've bought and sold 4, 5, 6 houses, you may have seen a few things, but even us who do this all day, every day, still run into new surprises.
Right.
Okay. So it's very important to have a good team behind you who's actually going to help you get to closing.
Absolutely.
Now, how important is it to have, as a buyer, your own agent? I mean, let's say you go see a house, you don't have an agent yet, and you go and you see a house that you want to buy, and it's that other agent's listing, and they tell you, oh no, I can handle both sides, so, you know, don't worry about it.
It's crucial. It is crucial. So you've got to understand
it's crucial that you have your own.
That you have your own, because that seller's agent, their fiduciary responsibility is for their seller, not for you. And so in the state of Tennessee, we have you can have a buyer's agent, so you can have your own representation. They can have their seller's agent. That seller is representing them. Your buyer's agent, their fiduciary responsibility is for you. You know, I've had...
Like what kinds of things could a seller's agent do to the buyer if they weren't represented by another agent?
Working through the contract, it's going to always be in their favor. Mm-hmm. You know, things like inspections, or what if things come up? A buyer's agent will help fight to make sure that you're going to keep your earnest money, you know, that you're on time, that the appraisal's done fairly and it's done correctly, that you're going to close on time.
And that if an issue comes up, then the repair actually gets made.
Then once you've gone through all of your final repair amendments, that those repairs are actually done and done the way that it's needed to be done. So just because you say you want the roof fixed, well, that's kind of broad.
Yeah.
You know, that's right. A very broad thing. Right. They could go up there with some silicone or something and kind of seal it up, and it's maybe going to last for another month. You know, so, but do you need it repaired? How do you need it repaired? And have all of that in amendment forms that's going to protect you. You know, you have a lot of money on the line, and a lot of people don't understand that you can't just walk away from a contract. It is a legally binding contract. So once you enter into this contract to buy this expensive house, you are legally obligated to be able to follow the process to close on this. Just because you may not want to, or just because something changes in your life, you could be sued up to the price of that home.
But that's where contingencies come in.
Yes, so there's, but if you don't have an agent that's fighting for you during those contingencies,
they may not put those in there.
There's all kinds of things that could happen. And those contingencies have time limits on them.
Right.
And ways to respond. So, you know, and respond in a proper time, or you could lose out your contingency on inspections if you don't have it resolved in a proper enough time. You know, so there's all kinds of things. So you want
to
know.
It'd be very easy for somebody who was not ethical to, and if they were handling both sides of the transaction, to let something slide because it's better for the seller.
Right.
Yeah, and I could see that.
And in most situations, though, I mean, their fiduciary responsibility is, again, then would be to that seller and to make sure it's going to come out in their favor.
Wow. Okay. So then do most people actually look at houses online before you, or do you get in a car and drive them around? How are things working these days?
Yeah, you know, the first process that you really need to do is have a good needs analysis with your buyer's agent. You know, they need to understand exactly what your must-haves and then your deal breakers. If your deal breaker is that you can't handle a long commute or you need to be close to your child's school, you know, there's really no sense in going to see a house that's 20 miles away from your school, you know?
Right, so, right.
You know,
or if you absolutely need four bedrooms, there's no point in looking at a three bedroom.
No, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then once you've talked to a good mortgage lender, never go over that price that what you feel comfortable with or what you're approved for.
Well, listen, we're going to pull the trigger on a break, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more of Hino's Home Show right after this. All right, welcome back to Hino's Home Show. We are brought to you by the fine folks at Accurate Mortgage Group. You can find them at accuratemtg.com or at hinoshomeshow.com. We are talking buying and selling houses this week. We've got special guest Wendy Dyes in the studio here with us of Legacy Real Estate Group. And one thing I see happening a lot, and I'm sure you see happening even more than that, is bidding wars. People are paying a lot more sometimes than what the asking price is on a house. Let's talk about, you know, if you're the buyer in that situation and you find yourself in a bidding war with a few other people, what are some things that we can do to try to win?
Right.
And get the house, other than, of course, you know, offering $1 million over asking price.
Well, good question.
Because then the house still has to appraise, so.
Well, absolutely. And so, you know, making sure that you've got a good agent that's going to get you prepared and a good mortgage lender, because the very, very first thing you have to do when you get into multiple offer situations is to have a pre-qualification letter.
Right.
So a seller is not even going to entertain any kind of contract that you've written until they know for sure that you can get a contract,
that you can actually afford to buy the house. You can get financing
for it. You can get a mortgage for it. Yeah. So make sure you have that. You know, make sure you're going in with the highest and best. If you're in a multiple bid situation, just make sure, you know, we're really not negotiating a lot. Prices of houses that pretty much go for what they've asked for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other things. So make sure it's your highest and best. Remember that the seller is going to be looking at their bottom line. So they don't really care how it's configured, you know, so if it's a little bit higher and you need some closing costs, but those closing costs are really killing buyers' deals right now. So, you know,
because sellers have so many offers on the table,
they do.
They can pick the one without that.
Yeah. So I would say if you need money for closing, you know, really just sort of tighten your belt for a while, do anything you can do to try to save as much money as you can so that you can be competitive, pay your own closing cost. Some people are paying more for a house. Some people are guaranteeing the appraisals.
So they're guaranteeing that they'll buy it for the asking price or whatever the agreed price is, no matter what happens with the appraisal.
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah. So that's kind of risky on the buyer's side of it.
Yeah.
It is. But on the seller, they don't care. They're getting their money.
Right.
There is a thing. So if you're unsure as to how high that the house is going to go for, there's a thing called an escalation clause.
Yeah. We've dealt with a few of those recently.
Yeah. So what that means is to say that it's a $250,000 house and you've got an extra 10 grand, but you don't want to just throw, you know, that $10,000 if you don't have to. So what you could do is to say that you would pay $1,000 or $3,000, whatever that is, over the highest bid up to $260,000. So if they get a bid that comes in at $251,000, at that point, if you put a $1,000 escalation clause in there, that you're basically paying it for $252,000.
It's kind of like how eBay operates, where you put in your maximum bid, and it automatically bids up your bid for you up until your cap, whatever it is that you put in there.
Right. You know, so I actually have a question about this because, you know, as mortgage people, we're not involved in the negotiations hardly ever. And so if you were to do an escalation clause, and let's say, you know, it was $1,000 increments and you were starting at $250,000, and in your circumstance, you said, you know, the highest offer was $251,000, so yours would go to $252,000. Well, if you had said you were willing to pay up to $260,000, how do you know that the seller actually got a bid at $251,000?
Well, that's a great question. So if you have a good buying agent, that they're going to make sure that is in the terms of that escalation clause, and that the agent would have to provide a legally signed contract.
The
actual offer from the last bid.
Okay.
So they would have to present that to me at that point before it would be binding.
So if somebody really did offer $259, mm-hmm. then the other agent
would have to produce that to the buying agent, and at that point, then that they would put in the contract that the make an amendment that the contract is $252,000.
Mm-hmm. Now let me play devil's advocate. Is there any, you know, other than it being unethical and illegal, is there anything preventing the selling agent from getting somebody they know to submit an offer for $259 so that they can get that $260 out of you?
I can't imagine that a licensed Tennessee agent would do that. They could lose their license.
They'd be risking their job for one deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. So I would highly suggest that no one does that.
Yeah, don't do that. Do not do that. Wendy, so I've seen sometimes people would write a letter to go along with their offer. Do those help at all? Like, you know, we really loved your house and, you know, here's our little story and please fall in love with us as a family and sell us your house.
Well, it possibly can. Sometimes you've got a seller that just really wants to be straightforward with whatever is the easiest contract. But a lot of times when you are in multiple offer situations, you may be sitting at 15, 20 of these contracts and they all start looking very similar. And they're all going to be competitive for the most part. So some point, you want to make sure as a buyer that you're going to have yourself stand out a little bit more. And so, yes, sellers, they loved that home and they want someone else that's really going to love it. So maybe over, if the contracts are still so similar, if they want a family, young family to come in there and to live and enjoy their home as much as they do, yeah, it could give you a very competitive advantage.
Interesting.
Yeah, we actually, good friends of ours purchased a home in another state, and writing the letter is actually what got them the house. So they were in a bidding war, like we're talking about, and their bid was somewhere like middle of the pack. Like, they didn't offer the highest amount, but they wrote a personal letter about why they liked the house and the architecture and the way that things were done, and talked about their personal story and that they wanted to raise a family there and what they were trying to do. Well, it turns out, and they didn't know this at the time, they just wrote the letter because they felt like that's what they should do. The seller was actually the person who had built the house and lived in it for 50 years.
Oh, wow.
And they still had the architectural plans from when it was built. It was framed in the house. And they wanted the house to go to someone who wanted to raise a family there because they had raised their family there. And so by writing this letter, they were the only people that wrote a letter. And even though they didn't have the highest price, the seller said, we want these people to buy our house. So they got the house for the price they wanted. The seller was happy. Everybody was happy. So it worked out really good. So yeah.
Interesting.
It's been successful to me. So one of the things that a lot of times people miss is that price isn't always the determining factor.
Right.
It just really isn't. So especially when you're just getting down to, you know, sometimes $1,000 here and there. So other things that you can do to be actually personal on this and understand what the needs are of the sellers is the fact that you've got a good agent that's going to understand that. So it may possibly be that the sellers are building a house or they've got other factors that maybe they need a longer closing date. Maybe they need to stay in the house after closing for a week or two or a month, you know, so being flexible on things like that. I've had that often where, you know, for $1,000.
So basically the buyer being flexible. So yeah, maybe we're only offering $1,000 more than the other guy, but we'll let you go ahead and stay in the house an extra week after closing because you need that time to move out. That might be something that might swing the deal.
Absolutely. Yeah. So make sure that your agent is asking what are the most crucial things for the seller that they're looking for in a buyer, and you can do things like that.
Well, I had an interesting conversation. I was on the phone with a real estate agent from another state who's moving to Tennessee, and we got to start talking about the market and stuff like that. And one of the things that she brought up that she was surprised about was back where she lives currently, a lot of people in competitive situations drop the inspection. They say, you know, we won't bother inspecting your property, and that using that as an incentive to try to get the deal. And she was surprised that we continue to do inspections here. And I was surprised by that because I would never buy a house without inspecting it to make sure that it wasn't about to fall apart.
And
that at all?
No. In fact, that would be the very last thing that I would ever recommend that anyone does. And in fact, if somebody wants to drop the inspections, then they're going to have to, you know, put a disclaimer with me that saying that
they understand
what the risks are. So, you know, I get that we're in a in a really hard market. We're in a very competitive market, but also be smart with your decision. This is a long-term purchase that you're making. So it is your right under the state of Tennessee to be able to have an acceptable appraisal and inspection. So there's anything that could happen. It could be termite riddled. You could have $20,000 of foundation issues. There could be all kinds of issues in that house.
Now, and a lot of times things that aren't necessarily visible to the average person.
Absolutely.
You walk through the house, like, everything looks great.
Right,
you know?
Radon, you know, yeah. And having a radon test. So that could be lethal to a young child or an older adult in the house. So the one thing that you could do is to say that you are purchasing the house as is, but yet you are continuing on with your inspections. Meaning that I am going to take this house as is, sort of a pass-fail. I'm going to buy this house. I'm going to have the inspections on it. But if it comes out that something that's really I can't deal with, then you can get your earnest money back and you can get out of the contract.
Right.
Now, that I would say is something that you could do if you're walking into the house and knowing that you're probably going to be having to do some repairs.
Yeah. I mean, most every house is going to need something, you know, like we talked right. about earlier.
But
you just want to make sure that it's nothing really major.
Exactly. That would cover you in that instance. So you're not going to nitpick the sellers on those small little things like a leaky faucet, things like that, that you're okay to fix and repair.
Yeah.
You want to be competitive. You like the house. But yet, if it is something major, you're not going to, you know, be stuck.
Wendy, you have been a wealth of information as always. How can people find you?
They can find me on the web at wendydiesrealty.com.
And we should point out that Dyes is spelled D-Y-E-S.
Correct. Wendy, D-Y-E-S.
.com. All right. Well, thanks. You can find us at HinosHomeShow.com and, of course, also at AccurateMTG.com. But either way, you'll find us. We would love to hear from you. Until we meet again, have a great week.
Accurate Mortgage Group, a division of Acopia LLC, is an equal housing lender, NMLS 4664, and a MLS 1666140.